And it's another Live at 5 Sports. Todd Burgeth enjoying some vacation this week, building pinch hitting for Todd. And we've got Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune and the Talk North podcast joining us as he does. And Jim, boy, I tell you what, a lot of people looking forward to tonight's big women's basketball clash between LSU and Iowa. And some even compare it. I mean, you have to be my age maybe, or maybe not quite my age, but they kind of compare it to the matchup between Larry Bird and of course, Magic Johnson back in the 79 championship.
Yeah, I don't know if it should be elevated to that in terms of a one-on-one. You had Bird and Magic at a time when the NBA really needed stars coming into the league together and playing for a championship. Angel Reese is a very, very good player. LSU is the defending champions. But, you know, Caitlin Clark is a way better player than anybody LSU has. LSU has had the better team. So I think it's fascinating in that regard. Caitlin Clark is the greatest college basketball player of all time. It's just that simple. LSU beat her in the title game last year. I mean, that's the storyline. And let's not forget, as good as that matchup is, and it is probably the premier matchup of the college basketball season to date, it's not that much more compelling than the next game, which is Paige Bueckers and UConn going up against Juju Watkins, the great freshman from USC, who had 30 points the other night. So this is, you know, I wrote about it in the paper today. I think tonight's Elite Eight women's games are better than anything we're seeing in the men's Final Four.
And it's probably by far better than we'll see in the women's Final Four.
Well, right, yeah, because I think these might be the four best teams in the country right now. Well, I don't know if USC is a great team or not yet. They still have a lot to prove, but Juju Watkins is the best freshman in the country. Yeah, this is it. I mean, and I really, you know, for just personal, selfish, provincial reasons, I would love to see Paige and Caitlin in the Final Four, two Midwestern kids who grew up idolizing Lynx players. You know, I think Caitlin favored Maya Moore and Paige Bueckers favored Lindsey Whalen. To see those two in the Final Four, that would be fantastic.
It sure would. And, you know, certainly not in the limelight, but the Gopher women, they have a game tonight as well out in Laramie, Wyoming. Be kind of nice if they could make it to the NIT Final Four.
Yeah, and they might have had a chance if Mara Brown stayed healthy. She tweaked her foot injury. It's not serious, but they're certainly not going to play her tonight. Her season's probably over, and this team just has not functioned when she's been hurt.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. I guess I hadn't heard about that. Well, the Timberwolves were in first place for a brief moment. I don't know. We haven't just talked about this lately, but you certainly want to have one of those top spots to have that home court advantage. Is it important for them to actually win the regular season championship?
We don't know. The obvious advantage to having the number one seed is you'll have home court advantage for every game seven in the playoffs. But I've had this conversation with a bunch of Timberwolves people. They don't know. They think wanting a certain seed in terms of the matchups is impossible. It's impossible to predict. I mean, if you're the number one seed, you might end up playing LeBron James, who's shooting better than he's shot in his entire career, and Anthony Davis, and a team that's been hot. If you're the number two seed, you might get Luka Doncic, who's playing better as well as anybody in the league right now, might be the league MVP. There are no good matchups in the West. So they want to be the number one seed because it'd be a great achievement and it would give them game sevens at home. But there's no way of predicting which matchup is going to be the best matchup or how the other teams down in the standings are going to fall.
Boy, you got that on the hit the nail on the head there. Maybe more so this year than a lot of years in that scenario, the way it could play out. And even, you know, tomorrow night's game, Houston is technically still in the fight to maybe get that number 10 spot.
And Jalen Green has absolutely turned it on and become one of the best players in the league. They are no fun to play anymore. There are really, I would say, 11 teams in the West who put a scare into you. Now, obviously, the Timberwolves are a better team than most of those teams, but you just don't know how things are going to play out in a short series, and you certainly don't know how things are going to play out in a short series if Karl Anthony Towns isn't either available or at his best.
You know, it seems, though, like they have, done very well in his absence. What's your take on that? Some guys have obviously had to step up, and some are just given more opportunity with Towns on the bench.
They have played well overall without him. And part because Naz Reid has adapted so well to the front to the starting lineup, and he and Gobert have played really well together, in part because Mike Conley has stepped up his shooting. You miss a lot of things with Towns out. His size is, but mostly, even though he's a big guy, you really miss his three-point shooting. He's a great three-point shooter who can shoot over anybody at any time. Conley and Morris and Jordan McLaughlin getting hot, they've mitigated the loss of his three-point shooting with a lot of those contributors. It doesn't mean it's going to keep happening. It also doesn't mean you don't have a higher end with Towns on the floor. Towns is, he's at worst, he's the third best player. I think they win that game last night if they have Towns, because they had a bad three-point shooting night, and if they had shot the three better, they would have won.
Yeah, I was just going to say they could have really used him down the stretch when they could not hit anything. What about the strategy of that? Rudy Gobert is tipping the ball out. They're getting second and third chances. Would you ever think of maybe stepping inside the line for a little closer shot if you can't make a three?
Well, all the analytics tell you that the worst shot in basketball is the long two-pointer. Everything in modern basketball points toward you either want to shoot the three, or you want to get to the rim for a sure basket, or you want to draw a foul. Those are the money plays. People who shoot long two-pointers, it might work in the moment. It's not going to work over time. And these guys are all capable of hitting three-pointers, so why wouldn't you shoot it from behind the line instead of from just a little bit inside the line?
Well, the Twins took two out of three. I guess that's the bright spot, but it's hard not to see that elephant in the room and the way that they got hammered yesterday.
Well, I think the biggest development of the first weekend was Royce Lewis getting hurt. He's going to be out at least a month. He might be their best player. He's certainly the best personality. He lifts the entire team up. It's just really sad to see him hurt again. So I think it's a good team. Listen, you're going to have some bad games. What I want to know about Ober was, what caused that? Because it's very strange. He's been very good against pretty much the entire league. Kansas City knocks the stuffing out of him. And they looked like they knew it was coming yesterday. So I wonder if they just have a way of picking up on his tips, that he's giving away. Okay, he holds his glove a certain way, the changeup's coming like that. That looked like a very suspicious outing to me. He didn't look like he had great stuff or great command, but they were hitting him like he was a batting practice pitcher who was telling him what was coming. So if it's a one-off, listen, you're going to lose games. If it's a one-off and that was just a bad start and it has no relation to anything else, no big deal. We will forget about it. If it was an indication that Ober is not going to have a very good season, then that would be a problem.
Well, you mentioned that this Royce Lewis story, I don't know, just how can you have tougher luck, I guess? The guy looks to be a physical specimen. How can he keep having these injuries?
It's a combination of some of it is just bad luck. Some of it, when you blow out your knee multiple times, there was probably something structurally wrong in there all along, and it was just going to pop at some point. I also think overall, and I know a lot of Twins fans are very, very upset that, hey, they traded for this guy and he got hurt. They traded for certain pitchers who have gotten hurt. You look around the major leagues, everybody's hurt all the time. Not everybody, but almost everybody. Cray and Buxton were hurt all last year, unable to play the way they're usually capable of playing. The modern baseball player works so hard to be explosive that they push their bodies to the brink where things, when I started covering baseball, players took 2-3 months off in the off season. They worked their way into shape during spring, doing baseball activities. When they did do workouts in the off season, it was usually baseball related. And they were also hitting against guys who were throwing 92. So they didn't have to have 100-mile-an-hour bat speed to catch up to it. Now everything is about maximum velocity, velocity in throwing, in bat speed, in running. And if you want to push yourself like that year-round to be exceptional, you're putting yourself at risk of injury. That's just the way it is.
I know it's a very small sample size, but you've got the Yankees off to a 4-0 start. They seem to be stacked, but again, can they stay healthy, I guess, is going to be a key. And then this whole scenario around Ohtani, where do you think that's actually going to end up? Are we going to know really if there was anything to that?
Well, there's something to it. And what's MLB is going to conduct an investigation, but the reality is the big investigation is going to come from the feds. So, and when it's the feds, there might be very intense investigating going on, and we might not always know about it. So it's a terrible story. It's hard to believe Ohtani had no knowledge what was going on or wasn't involved in some way, but it's probably going to take a long time for the investigation to play out.
Yeah, just, you watch the game like last night, you just kind of wonder what could be going through his mind right now. It's got to be a pretty uneasy time.
I would be very uneasy if I were him. At the very least, he wasn't paying attention as somebody was gambling his money, and that in itself would be a bad thing, but there are bigger implications out there.
Well, Jim, great catching up with you. I look forward to doing this week, and have a great day.
Great. Thank you, Bill.